A couple hundred years ago, the only thing you had to worry about was a hangover.
You're telling me you're an investigator?
More or less.
Today, because of your curse thingy, you can't sleep with anyone.
I'm not a taint. I'm your boss.
Or else you might feel a moment of true happiness.
You got a real addiction to the brooding part of life.
Lose your soul.
Except for the bulk of it, where I was nearly tortured to death.
Become evil again.
You're a demon hunter.
Rude demon hunter.
And kill everyone.
It's fucking fantastic.
I love that sound.
Thanks, Cornelia. I always appreciate your perspective.
Fuck you for making me laugh right before I have to shut up.
No, fuck you, Rex. Fuck you for talking about my mama that way. That's my job.
Hello, welcome to Ale with Angel. I'm Rex.
I'm Josh.
Today we are reviewing Season 3, Episode 10, Dad.
Daddy.
You were going to fucking do that. The moment I wrote down the title of this episode, I'm like, God damn it, he's going to make that joke.
Didn't even occur to me until right this moment.
Sometimes I know you better than you know yourself.
I mean, it occurred to me at several other points in the episode.
Oh, right.
But yeah. This one,
I'm sure.
That was organic. Purely organic. Just like that second extra poop I had to take just before we recorded. Sorry, we're so late, guys. You know how sometimes you poop and you're like, man, I'm good for the day. And then surprise, extra poop. Bam. Like, where did that come from? You think that's funny? Earlier today, I was telling you before we started recording, I took a nap because I had been up since like fucking 3 a.m.
Right.
Well, I knew it was going to happen someday. I just didn't think it was going to be today. I stepped out in the hallway to go use the bathroom, forgot my fucking keys.
Oof.
Yeah. I got extraordinarily lucky. And one of the backstage doors was unlocked.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, otherwise I'd have had to call one of the crew members to fucking come drive here and let me into the building.
I had something like that happen at work not too long ago where I walked out a door and didn't have the keys on me.
Mm-hmm.
Had to walk around the fucking building.
Well, you're lucky there was still a way back into the building.
Yeah.
There was literally zero ways back into the building. I could walk out of the building as much as I want.
At my work, there's at least two, maybe three doors that have a key code that I could enter with.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I could always get back into the building with or without keys because I know the key code.
Yeah. And also, luckily, I had my phone on me.
Oh, yeah.
That was a Hail Mary. I had absolutely no business being that lucky.
I've done that once, locked myself out without my phone. Like, I did that at home once.
But it was almost nightmare level. Have you ever, because just to give everybody a little bit of context here, we're at the place that I work in. It's a theater. I was taking a nap. I was off the clock. It's fine. I'm a manager. I can do whatever the fuck I want. But I wasn't wearing my belt. I didn't have any of my identification on me. I had taken everything out of my pockets except for my phone and forgot my keys. It was one step away from being caught in public, locked out in your underwear. One step away.
Important question for you, Josh.
Yeah.
Do you feel as nearly naked as I do if you wear literally everything you normally wear except your belt?
Yes.
Isn't it awful?
Yeah.
It's so awful.
I don't understand how people can not wear a belt.
I don't either.
Wait, your clothes just fit you? Fuck you.
Oh, it's not even about clothes fitting me. Even when pants fit me perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have a belt. They just don't feel right.
Yeah, I still got to have a belt.
Oh, like, I can't do it.
Even if it's just for the peace of mind that if you get a limb cut off, you can keep
emergency tourniquet.
Yeah, exactly.
No, belts are very useful things to have.
Especially if you get cut off at the torso, it's already right there. You just cinch it down.
Yeah, if you lose both your legs, you're good.
You're good. No problem. Just no big deal.
It's doodle-doo time, Josh.
You just hope that somebody's there to catch all that delicious, milky alien juice that comes out of you. You get that reference at least, right?
Yes.
Alien?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I do.
Why did he bleed white stuff?
It's really more android juice.
He was an android. That's right. That's weird. Anyway, we need to get down on our knees and worship with our mouths the patron saints of Doodle Doo. I'm going to read that list for you in the dirtiest way possible. Well, which is the normalest way possible also. Liam Neville, Monica Fonseca-Taez, Tsuba Spike, Audrey, Two French Names, Bridget McCloy, Dead Serious, Ally B, Nathan Lancey, Dulcinea, Rachel Doodle Doo, DTS, Cubby the Seal, Mr. Tabalicious, Sandra Craig, Jay Sommer, Catherine Parkinson, Karen Moon, Chris V-Man, Pat Like Turtle, bad at changing their name heaps, Two-Tone Don't Fucking Call Bradley Cooper Gnome, Father Defenestrado, Methuen de Doodle Doo, Kelly MC, Jesse Rain, Alex from the Heart, and Carrie Phillips.
Thank you so much. Without you, this show literally isn't possible.
Literally. I haven't bothered to count, but that feels like a lot.
It's a lot of names.
27.
Yeah.
It's 27.
It's crazy.
Very nice.
When we started this podcast, I would have been impressed with 12 people listening to it that wasn't us.
Yeah, it's not 69 nice, but you know what is 69 nice, Rex?
What's that?
Our iTunes reviews.
Oh, yeah, we're at 69.
We still have 69 of them. I can't be mad about it.
It's hard to be mad about
it. It's so nice. But we'd like more. Wink, wink, yes, nudge, yes. Nudge. Aggressively.
Remember, when we get up to 75 total reviews, we are going to give away a free hoodie to one of the people who has reviewed us.
Indeed.
Also, to reiterate, if you've reviewed us, all you gotta do is send a screenshot of your review to beerwithbuffy@gmail.com, and we will send you a free sticker.
Oh, wait,
it's free shit.
Way to throw in the email there.
Yeah, we don't, free shit.
Don't normally do that. And shit, as long as we're plugging ourselves, giggity. Moo. If you ever feel like giving us a call, you can do that. Or text us or leave us a voicemail at 269-743-0783.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then I guess it's time for a mom synopsis.
Yeah, now that we're done jerking ourselves off here. Yeah.
No, we're not.
For a moment.
Briefly. Briefly.
Joshua. What are you doing, Joshua? Oh, just a little helicopter parenting. Really? But your brother is the helicopter pilot, Joshua. That can't be legal. Yeah, there's no actual helicopters involved. Just, you know, being a bad parent. Oh, Joshua. Like mother, like son. I've got so many tips and tricks to give to you. Well, that's actually the first thing I would have asked you about, but this kind of parenting is exactly the opposite of what you did to me. What do you mean, Joshua? I was plenty overbearing and hovering all up in your personal shit. Yes, that's true. But only in superficial ways that were not actually at any point for my own well-being, safety, emotional growth, or even mental security. You just wanted a sycophant that couldn't run away from you and a vessel to relive your childhood so that you could take credit for everything I did, even though you put zero effort into my abilities or talents, and in fact were nearly always counterproductive to them. Jesus Christ, Joshua! Have you been to therapy yet? 4 years, Mom. 4 years. Remember when I found one for you, too, and you didn't go? Oh, Joshua, you know I only remember things that are convenient for me in the moment. That's a great point. I bet you didn't even watch today's episode of Geraldo. What the hell does that have to do with Angel, Joshua? Exactly, because today on Angel, the A-team comes home after a few long days of running and acquiring a baby. The place is trashed. Angel goes whole hog on being a daddy now and is super overprotective of the baby. I missed one. That's yours. Yeah. You get to keep that. Lauren moves in and has the Furies put up a protection barrier around the hotel, which is a good thing because at least four different factions are already actively vying for Angel's baby. But it doesn't hold up for long, and the A-team is forced to stand and fight while Angel retreats with the baby. Wolfram and Hart sends troops after him. Some demons, vampires, and bikers follow suit. Angel takes them out with ease and runs back to Wolfram and Hart to tell Linwood exactly whose ass he can kiss.
It's daddy's.
I added that one extra. You can keep that too. The baby gets a much needed checkup at the hospital, and him and his daddy get much needed first names, Connor and Geraldo, respectively. Meanwhile, Holtz is busy recruiting new warriors to fight for his cause, while Lila researches who in the hell Holtz even is. The end.
Ladies, gentlemen, spiny-headed looking creatures.
Sun goes down, vampire. Soon as the sun goes down, vampire.
Competition is a beautiful thing.
So as you said, we open today's episode on the hotel as the A-team are coming on home.
Hyperion.
The place is trashed, but there are no dead bodies.
It's Hyperionly inappropriate.
Sure.
You know what? I said it. You can't take it back.
Yeah, fair. Anyway, notice there are no dead bodies here.
I did notice.
That is good.
Mm.
They're looking over the damage. There's blood. There's cages.
Because our boy Harvey Keitel came in and cleaned that shit right up.
Yes.
Just call indeed. Him the janitor or the cleaner. Yeah, whatever.
Fred has a brief moment of being worried about the things that were in the cages being still loose, but no, there was nothing in the cages because they're labeled clearly baby and mommy.
Yeah. The things that they were for are, never quite made it in.
I think one of my favorite bits, first thing here, is Wesley's like, some bastard blew a gaping hole in the lift. And then Angel just says, sorry, my bastard.
Sorry, my bastard. Yeah. Oh, man. I was a little too tired to appreciate that moment, I think.
Right.
And we get a little bit of a better look at their explodey hole job there. It didn't look quite as bad as I remembered, but they may have touched it up.
It looks way better in this episode than it did in the moment. Mm. Well, because in the moment that scene happened, it was clearly just paper.
Hmm.
Or like maybe aluminum foil or something that looked like a quote, hard air quotes, wall.
And I barely gathered that it was the fucking elevator lift. Right. I wouldn't have noticed that if you hadn't told me.
Yeah. And the only reason I knew is because at one point in time, Holtz looked down the elevator shaft.
Down the shaft. Yeah. Giggity.
He's inspecting some shafts.
Just need to look all the way. If you could just open that up. That's a mighty large shaft you have there.
Oh, you did it wrong. Damn it.
Yes, just like that. I don't know how the jug players get two different tones out of playing.
Oh, no. Jug player, playing a jug, like the people who can actually do that, is actually quite impressive.
There must be a thumb hole in it or something.
No.
Hmm.
It's angle.
Doesn't seem like that would work. Anyway.
Well, it doesn't work with this because it's just a bottle. A jug is larger around, so the angle can change the pitch.
All right. Well, next time you play my penis like a jug, we're going to test this theory.
I have never, nor will I ever, play your penis like a jug.
That's exactly what we want the public to hear. Yes.
Mm-hmm. No. No.
Yeah. Oh, you want us... You want us to tell them otherwise?
I am being honest here and saying that I have never, nor will ever, go anywhere near your penis.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Oh, hey, look, Lauren's here.
Hey!
Saving the day.
You know who else has never gone near my penis?
Lauren.
Andy Hallett.
Anyway, Lauren enters. He's got bags. He decides he's going to crash here because, hey, they blew up his bar twice.
Huh.
And they got the room.
Twice. Yeah. We didn't even bother going back to look at it. They're just like, all right, fuck it. Lauren doesn't have a bar anymore.
Yeah.
He just lives here now.
Well, and this is the moment where he becomes really part of the crew. And I think the club's gone forever.
Yep.
No more Caritas. Mm-hmm. Rest in peace.
Rip.
Yep.
Yeah, this is the first moment where somebody does the smart thing and says, hey, you've got a whole fucking hotel.
Right.
I think I'm just going to live there.
Yeah.
Duh.
So now currently Angel, Fred, and Lauren all live in the hotel.
Mm.
I wonder where the fuck does Gunn live?
Seems like Gunn would live there too.
Maybe.
Wesley's the only one dumb enough to be paying rent for somewhere else.
I mean, Cordy pays rent. Just pays a good deal because it's haunted.
Definitely Cordy, but I'm pretty sure Wesley has his own place too.
Cordy keeping the apartment she has makes perfect sense to me because she has a ghost who does things for her.
She has a really cool ghost. Yeah. That's true.
So she basically has a smart house kind of set up.
Right.
Which is in ways better than a smart house because it can move shit for you.
Yeah. No, smart houses. It's just, oh boy. Just voice activated.
Just imagine putting microwave popcorn in the microwave and then going and sitting the fuck down and it just gets brought to you.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really hungry, so I might make a lot of references to food.
Don't be looking at my cookie. That's not your cookie.
I mean, it's oatmeal raisin, so eh.
Yeah, good.
I don't like oatmeal raisin. I don't like raisins. I don't like grapes.
You're a fucking weirdo. So, yeah, Lauren pops up. Yeah, he wants to see the baby. And we see now that Angel is going to be quite the helicopter parent. He fusses over a cut on the baby's face that looks like a gross ketchup smear to me. Another demon pops in to say hi real quick, but Gunn and Wesley take him down with a bone saw and a crossbow. They realize that they're going to be enduring a constant onslaught from every demon that wants anything to do with the prophecy. Anybody who's figured out that the baby is part of that prophecy.
Yeah.
And Angel suddenly is like, I think I figured it out. And we're supposed to think that it means something about the prophecy, but he's only referring to the baby wetting himself.
Yeah. Fun fact, by the way, that baby is played by triplets.
Huh. Three different babies, huh?
Yep.
That's how you do it.
Well, there's a legal thing where babies can only be on set for a very limited amount of time.
Mm.
And only on camera for a very limited amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, anytime you see babies, they're usually twins or triplets or something along those lines.
Right. Yeah.
Most commonly, of course, twins, but this one's triplets.
Obviously, you know, the first glaring example that comes to mind is Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen.
Yeah. That's usually the one most people think of.
Yeah. But no, I'm sure it's happened way more times than that. So we get the opening sequence. Meow, 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 meow. They make a list of known threatening quantities and a list of potential new threats that they can think of. Holtz, Wolfram and Hart, the vampire cult are the known quantities. And then their starting working list, otherwise, is the Order of Phileas, Beltar the Cremator, Piper Beast, Frank, a local mobster who specializes in kidnapping.
I want an episode of Frank.
Right. The Scourge. But these are all just funny things that the writers chose to write down. I don't think we actually end up seeing any of these guys. I don't think any of these are even any of the three that show up later.
No, I don't think any of them are.
Hmm. So Angel continues to hoard the baby from anyone else's attempts to assist, even though Angel is clearly getting frustrated as the baby continues crying and refusing to drink from his bottle.
Hold on, though. I just have to point this out because the way Angel goes about trying to give the baby its bottle,
mm-hmm.
he's basically like trying to hand it to the baby. And it's like, just put the fucking thing in its mouth.
Stick it in its mouth, man.
Like, the baby can't hold the bottle. You can't hand it to him.
Make that baby learn how to play the jug.
Oh my fucking God.
That's how you do it. Daddy.
Jesus Christ.
I still got it.
Oh, I think the title of this episode is Daddy's Jug.
It's an option. It's definitely an option.
Jesus Christ.
So Angel's like, well, great. We've got a list. We just need to erase each one of them. And Fred misunderstands this. And it's like, oh, I can do that. And starts erasing Holtz.
No. Angel very casually is like, no, we're going to just fucking kill them all.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, we're just going to erase them. No sympathy whatsoever.
Anything that vaguely threatens this baby is just gone. Poof.
Yep.
It will be a bloody, pulpy mess on the floor.
And you know what? And I fucking believe him.
And I will poop in it.
Yeah.
Yes. A poopy, bloody mess on the floor.
Just throw baby diapers at it.
Oh, there you go. It'll clean it up eventually. Yeah. That's how that works, right?
Oh, God.
And so, yeah, Fred's erasing the names, and Cordelia's like, Fred? And she's like, oh, you mean in like a squishy, murdery kind of way.
Yeah.
Yes, Fred. Yes, Fred. That is what it means.
We're talking about squishy murder.
Mmm, the best kind of murder.
Yes.
Mmm, marshmallow murder. Stick it in the fire. Ah! Gooey. Just like organs and sinew.
We cut to the underground lair where Holtz and Sanjan are heading back to their lair through a tunnel. The grappler demons are following behind. Sanjan is lecturing Holtz fairly angrily that he let Angel go, which, you know, there's some grounds to stand on there.
I got a very mommy and daddy are fighting kind of vibe.
Oh, yeah.
From these two.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Like, they haven't known each other very, very long, but they're definitely fucking already.
Right? Well, and it's very obvious that Holtz is not the least bit at all
beholden
to Sanjan. Yeah, like, he does not care.
He doesn't give a
one bit.
As soon as he found out that Sanjan can't touch anything,
right?
He's like, oh, what are you going to do about it? Whisp around me?
Yeah.
Vigorously? You're gonna annoy me while I try to sleep? If I were Sanjan, I'd be like, that's a good idea, actually.
Right. Well, one of the... Sanjan keeps being like, what are you doing? You just fucking... Just kill him.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you need to do. And then Holtz, of course, is like, but you didn't tell me that she was pregnant. He's like, because it doesn't matter. You're just supposed to kill her.
Mm-hmm.
But no, she killed herself. And, you know...
Yeah, you weren't hiring...
Valid kind of point.
Which part?
The part where Sanjan is mad because, like, he's not killing him.
Oh, yeah. Except, you know, he doesn't realize that he didn't hire a mercenary here. He thought he was just getting a free mercenary because this guy already wanted to kill Angel.
Right.
He wasn't doing this to do Holtz a favor, really. He was doing it to do himself a favor.
Oh, exactly.
And it's biting him in the ass because he didn't hire a mercenary. He hired a fucking death artist.
Right. He failed to consider Holtz's passion.
Yeah.
And that is, he doesn't want Angel dead. He wants him to feel all the pain that Holtz has felt.
Wants him to suffer.
Wrong guy for the job there, Sanjan.
Mm-hmm. But also, right guy for the job for dragging out a few episodes of Angel. So, yeah, Sajan's like, come on, chop chop. We got a prophecy to fulfill here. And Holtz just wants to get rid of the grappler demons. Step one, get rid of the grappler demons. Step two, step three, profit.
Yes.
But Sajan's like, oh no, you can't do that. We paid for 2 weeks of the grappler demons. And then they just subsequently fall over choking and die because Holtz is way ahead of the game and he poisoned their drinks.
Yes.
Because he doesn't want mercenaries. He wants warriors that will die for his cause. What an asshole. He's like a LARPer that takes it too seriously. So Sajan's all, what the fuck, bro? That shit was expensive. Like, what now, man? And Holtz is like, well, you've got yourself a little magic box here. I recommend we use it to find information. And Sajan is very proud of his internet connection speed and pulls up the demon database immediately. And they're looking for obituaries.
Yep. Which at first I was like, what the fuck? Why is Holtz wanting to look up obituaries? Hmm. Makes sense later.
Obituaries. I think that's the correct way to pronounce it now.
I don't think it is.
I don't think so, Tim.
I don't want to share my feelings. I don't want to open up. I want to find the guy that killed Tina. And I want to look him in the eye. Then what?
Back to the Hyperion.
Which, fun fact, we see the computer monitor in front of Cordy, and she is looking at the exact same demon lookup website that was on Sajan's.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Also, fun fact, that was used in Buffy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember where or when, but I definitely recognized it.
Yeah.
It's not the first time we've seen that demon's website.
Right.
I think. Could be wrong about that. But I'm going to go with it. I'm running with it.
Yep.
I got this.
Cordy points out that there are already many websites offering money for the baby. Angel's still wandering around trying to feed the baby.
They add the ninja guy to the list because there might be more of them, which honestly, it's not a bad theory. I think we happen to know that that's probably not the case, but they don't. That's a good assumption, actually. It's just one asshole that Lila sent in, so... But there could be more. Angel is trying to pacify the baby. He's got a little teddy bear in a bottle. The baby won't stop crying. There's a big flashbang all of a sudden. But it's okay. It's just the Furies.
Putting a force field around the hotel.
Oh, yeah. And I bet they did it for free and then had a foursome with Angel.
Oh, he's busy with the baby.
I think he doesn't really need his hands. They've got plenty of hands. The baby's too young to know what's going on.
What I want to know is that if Angel has had this kind of pull with the Furies way before this, why the fuck has he never called this in? Like, the hotel could have used a force field for a lot of time.
He likes to do it the hard way.
From the first day they moved in, put up a fucking force field.
You know... I mean, it's because it makes it difficult to get in and out. They can only go in and out through one special doorway.
I mean, okay, fine.
Seems like there'd be variations of the spell, though, where they could just, you know, be able to waltz in and out.
I mean, there's the spell existed at Karatas. People walked in and out all the fucking time.
It was a different spell. It wasn't a barrier spell. It was a violence protection spell.
Well, you... Same thing, though. Fucking put it so that the demons, when they crash your hotel, they can't kill you.
I guess. I'm sure there's all kinds of filters we could apply.
All I'm saying is that this is kind of one of those circumstances where, oh, look, they brought up this thing that can exist, and then because it's just never used again,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of dumb.
Seems like it would have been most useful for the praying mantis demons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The instance of this that I always think of when this sort of thing comes up is in Harry Potter, when they time travel in Harry Potter.
Mm.
They do it only once in that book, never again. And it's just, there's so many times in Harry Potter where it's like, why are they not using this thing they did in the last movie in this one?
Well, because it's dangerous, Rex.
I fucking hate those books.
I think that's come up like every episode for this entire season, which is fine.
Maybe.
You know what? Maybe. The more I learn about how big of a fucking just goblin J.K. Rowling is,
yeah,
the more I kind of just want the entire Harry Potter franchise to die.
For me, it's mostly like the more I learn about how to write a fucking book, the more I realize that...
It was a garbage series?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Like...
You know, I thought they were fun, but it not fun enough to make me want to come back to it.
Right.
I'll never
and
reread
so
them.
So many people, like when I talk about wanting to get a book published, so many people are like, oh, that's hard to do. You never know. You probably won't be able to do it. It's like, I know for a fact I can write better than the goddamn Harry Potter books. I know it for a fact. And I sure as fuck can write better than goddamn Twilight. So
a mosquito can write better than Twilight.
Well, exactly. So like it does not feel like a pipe dream to me to try writing a book and trying to get published.
Mm-hmm.
Because the more I learn, the more I realize, no, it's not necessarily easy, but it's not complicated.
You just got to go stick your face in the right soup and blow.
Kinda. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about doing the footwork, going to cons, meeting people, building a network.
Sir, I dare say, did you just blow your face in my soup? I should like to give you a publication.
Well, gosh, sir, I didn't know it was that easy.
Anyway, tangent aside, moving on.
All right. So
They've put up a barrier around the whole hotel. Password activated exit door in the sewer, controlled by the Pylean word for hedgehog, which we never find out what it is, but it's supposedly something funny in English, like penis or something.
Right.
Vagina, perhaps. Titty wagon. Use your imagination. Mine's not very good, as you can tell.
It's kind of narrowly focused.
Asshole. Okay, I see your point.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Angel tells Gunn he needs more firepower. Gunn thinks he can provide. Angel starts to nitpick everyone's efforts and tells them that they're not good enough. Wesley's like, hey, whoa, slow your roll there, big daddy. And Angel's like, I'll slow your roll with my penis. That's what he said.
Yes, that's exactly what he said. That was a direct quote from the episode.
That's right. Look it up.
Cordy points out that they actually need to take the baby to a doctor for the newborn checkup to get a bunch of fucking shots and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Angel's like, no, he's not sick. We're not going to a fucking doctor. Which, you know, given U.S. healthcare system, that's fair.
Can't really blame him. But apparently he really does need that vitamin K shot or something.
Yes.
I don't know what that's about.
I don't either.
Okay. It sounds like a legitimate thing. It sounds like they didn't opt for circumcision, which is good.
Right. Yeah. She asked if.
Yeah. I'm vehemently against circumcision and could not be more upset that I was circumcised.
No, I actually had a period of time in my life of about a solid year where I was like, it clicked for me of how like bullshit
violated?
It was.
Of how violated you were.
Oh, yeah. And how just like. How dare like anybody take that choice away from somebody?
Exactly. If it's so fucking important, which it isn't at all, the kid can make their own fucking decision when they're old enough. You know, even if they're only like 10 years old and they're like, I want the skin chopped off the end of my penis, which they're not going to say.
Exactly.
Nobody's ever going to say that. And it doesn't need to happen. We're not living in the fucking desert with no running water.
Right.
It's like that's really the we're not living in a fucking blah, blah. We have clean running water. It's fine.
Yes.
Anyway. So
now all our fans know that we are both circumcised.
I'm pretty sure we've bitched about that before.
Probably, yeah.
And also, it's very common for our generation.
Well, yeah.
So it's just kind of assumed. It's the exception to not be circumcised. And multitudes of generations just getting their dick skin ripped off at birth. No big deal.
You know the most common reason why now...
Because that's what his daddy's penis looks like.
Yep.
Yep.
Which... Bullshit.
Oh, yeah? Are we going to be sword fighting our dads? Is that how that was supposed to go down? What? Anyway. Daddy! Is this what your penis looks like?
On guard, son.
Jesus.
Anyway.
Well, this has been Al with Angel. I'm Josh. All right.
There's another potential title. Oh, fuck.
On guard.
On guard, son.
Cut over to the Gerba thump thump.
Oh, man.
Where Lynn Wood's watching the camera feed for the Hyperion, and he's like, what the fuck is this shit? How did this even happen? And Lila and Gavin explained that it was a technicality in the wording of the prophecy. The baby wasn't born per se because it was poofed into the world instead of coming out of a birth canal. A very bullshit loophole, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Which makes Lynn Wood want to hire the prophecy writers.
Which, you know what? They got a good job in legal writing then.
Yeah, they would. Yeah.
And then Linwood points out that he likes kids. he never got to really know his own before the senior partners had them killed.
Yeah. And he still works for them.
I guess he probably like offered them via sacrifice.
He
or
didn't
something.
Say killed. He said taken away by the senior partners. They could be doing other things and he just didn't get to raise them. But I think it's a good thing because for as much as he says he likes kids, I don't think I like that he likes kids.
Even if
it's completely innocent.
And also he doesn't actually like kids, I think, because like
that's half the joke.
Right, cuz after that line he says turn up the volume and then you hear the volume increase, the baby's crying. He's like turn down the volume.
Turn that volume down. Not even 2 seconds. And I'm like, yeah, nobody wants to hear that shit.
I do want to say major kudos to the sound guy in this episode, because while they did have the baby crying a lot, it was done in a way that wasn't super grating. Like, it was a little bit grating, but, like, babies crying are supposed to be grating, and that was the goal, that it would be a little grating.
Yeah.
But, like, it wasn't anything like there actually being a baby there crying, and I'm very grateful for that, because it's one of the major reasons why I dislike any time there's a baby in a show or a movie, if they have it cry, and it's just this fucking loud grating noise.
And also, in this next scene, I wasn't sure Angel was going to be able to hold on to his shit because I was having trouble myself. But just real quick, last thing of note in this particular scene, Gavin has an intercept team working on tactical scenarios.
Yes.
Linwood wants all the info they can get on Holtz. And then he does this awkward and poorly executed bit where he baby talks to the baby through the monitor. Ugh. But he's saying all these dark truths about Angel in the baby talk. And I'm like, oh, stop.
Yeah.
Ew.
It's creepy.
It's creepy. It's stupid. I'd rather not dwell on it.
Yeah.
I can hold a note for a long time. Actually, I can hold a note forever. But eventually, that's just noise. It's the change we're listening for. The note coming after and the one after that. That's what makes it music.
So back to Angel's bedroom. There's a place to dwell.
Yes. He dwells there all the time.
That's true.
He's still trying to cheer the baby up. You know, apparently he did get the baby fed at some point.
I'll get your baby fed at some point. I don't know why I couldn't stop myself from saying that. That's what we're calling it now.
He pulls out the last ditch effort, Josh, and he begins to sing to the baby.
And if there's one thing David Boreanaz should not do ever, it's sing.
To be fair, he's not really fully singing. He's kind of whisper singing. And it's tolerable.
He almost pulls it off. I can still tell that he's like the most tone deaf asshole on the planet.
Yes.
But you're right. It's tolerable.
I also appreciate the characterization here that he sings Irish lullaby.
Right.
Because he's Irish.
And I hear the leprechaun in his voice while he's singing this. And I'm like, dude, stop. Just stop. You can sing Turaluralura without fucking selling cereal. It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
I promise.
Then enter Lorne, who's like, ooh, singing.
I hear bad singing. I'm here to fix that.
And Lorne starts to sing Ooh, Baby, Baby by The Miracles, which is much better.
Much.
Much, much better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, anything coming out of Lorne's mouth.
And Angel kind of sings with him a little bit.
Oh, a little bit, yeah.
A little bit.
And I was like, stop. Just let Lauren sing. Just stop.
Just let Lauren sing.
Okay, I guess you can participate.
Angel, your singing is just going to make the baby cry louder.
Lauren points out that Angel's vibes are getting kind of shitty.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what's stressing the baby out, because the baby's super connected to him, because he's literally his father.
To me, it would make a lot of sense that the baby wouldn't really respond well to Angel because he does not have a heartbeat or body temperature.
It always comes back to that.
No, but seriously,
I agree.
One of the important things when a baby is born is that the baby is put in the mother's arm because the mother's heartbeat, which is something the baby has been listening to its entire life, is soothing.
Except that Darla didn't have a heartbeat.
True. That's also very interesting. That didn't even click for me.
So he does this stupid bit where he's making classic Goo Goo Gaga faces at the baby. And I'm embarrassed for him as he's doing it. I felt the "I can't believe they're making me do this" vibes.
Right, as the scene very much so.
As the scene was happening.
I am a leading man. What the fuck is this shit? Uh-huh.
But I also felt like he was like, "I'm a professional. I should be able to do this." And he was giving it his all.
Yeah. He looked resoundingly goofy.
Yeah.
Like
maybe it's just awkward because I've never dealt with a baby. And I'm just like, okay, that's weird. But I don't know, something about it felt disingenuous to me.
And I have a sister who's 16 years younger than me, so I have dealt with a baby.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause, I mean, I've seen people do the baby voices and faces with actual babies.
Yeah.
And there's nothing about it that feels weird, awkward, or wrong. It's like, okay, these people are just really into that fucking baby. I didn't 100% buy it from Angel.
Right? No, I think I'm right there with you.
It's like the way that I freak out at a kitten. I'm like, oh my God, right? I can't stop. I didn't get this Angel just can't contain himself vibe.
One thing I think David Boreanaz conveys here very fucking accurately, every person I've ever met who is a new parent has a moment where they just are done. Where they're like, I want to love this child, but it is a loud, angry pain in the ass, and I just want to go to sleep. There's a few moments in this scene.
We all have that breaking point somewhere.
Right. And there's a few moments in this scene where David Boreanaz conveys that feeling excellently.
Yeah. I kind of got to that point with my job earlier today, which even at the most stressful points of this job, it doesn't give me that I'm just totally fucking done with this right now. Plenty of other jobs where I was like that constantly, right. You know, peak stress from second you walk in to the moment you fucking leave. But this is actually a good job where that's not a normal thing for me. Anyway.
Oh, I did want to mention a line from Lorne. He does say he's more than a mission bro. Look at him, and just tells him to look at him a few times before leaving. But it's very obvious that Angel is treating this like, no, I must protect this child. This is a sacred mission. And it's like, no, he's your fucking son. Mm-hmm. Just.
Yeah.
Like, he's your son.
Connect.
Treat him that way.
Bond. This is a person that you need to be emotionally connected to.
Exactly.
Not at.
Yeah.
Don't be connected at your son. So anyway, finally, he just tries vamping out, and it works like a charm, and the kid calms right the fuck down. So yeah. I don't know how to read into that other than he did just come to term in a vampire's body.
Yeah.
So there must be something innately about it
maybe.
He gets. Because obviously, Darla vamped out constantly and ate people. Anyway, cut to Wolfram and Hart, where Lila goes to the file room to get everything that they have on Angel, as Linwood asked, and in hopes of finding anything on Holtz. And the lady at the desk hands her this giant binder sitting
It's like a foot thick.
Yeah. And it's just sitting right behind her. It's like, wow, weird that you would just have it right there available like that. And it's like, there you go. Everything up to and including the baby that shouldn't have been born. And Lila's like, great. Tries to leave with it, and she's like, whoa, 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 they're a killer. That's just the directory to the full file.
Yeah, that's just the fucking reference key. And then she clicks a fucking light on her desk, or a switch on her desk, and lights turn on, and we see a long room with fuck tons of file boxes. She's like, here you go. Lila's like, all of those? Well, you know, the first 35
cabinets, something like that. Yeah, it was they almost pulled a Warehouse 31 moment.
Right.
Or 13. 31.
I really liked it. I liked this bit. But also, it's like, Yeah, dude's been alive for nearly 300 years. There would be a lot of information.
And I wonder how long Wolfram and Hart has been around in different types of iterations, you know?
Well, I think at some point, it is said in the series that it's been around since, like, prehistory kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, it's an ancient organization. Yeah. They've just grown with the times.
Exactly. So, like, depending on what prophecies they would have known when Angelus was there.
Yeah.
Like, maybe they knew ahead of time that he'd end up with a soul, even. Like, who knows?
Or that he was part of the Troclon.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, maybe, just maybe, they have, in fact, been keeping tabs on him. And this isn't just information they researched after the fact. This is like they were keeping records during.
This has been there a while.
Yeah.
They didn't just come up with this. They've actively been keeping tabs.
My favorite bit with this scene, though, was before it cuts, Lila's like, and I forget the name of the Chinese food place she said, but she's basically like, do they deliver Chinese food down here? And mm-hmm. I love that because one of those stupid little tropes that I absolutely love is lawyers eating Chinese food.
Right.
Because it is in almost every single iteration of law shows and like movies and everything. And mm-hmm. I love it.
Well, and also Private Eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and the whole idea is that like, especially back then, there was limited foods that you could get delivered.
Right.
So like, and Chinese food places were almost always open
mm-hmm.
and you could almost always get Chinese food.
Mm-hmm.
I miss 24-hour Chinese food.
I miss 24-hour literally anything besides Speedway and Shell.
My fiance and I started going to the gym during vampire hours.
Uh-huh.
And it's wonderful.
Hmm.
I missed going somewhere at like midnight.
Right. Except the pool isn't open at vampire hours there.
Right, but their pool's not that great.
Yeah, it's pretty small. Anyway, yeah, Lila orders Chinese food. Cut to the street where Holtz stalks down some woman who seems pretty tough. He carries the obituary of a woman that looks just like her. I forget what her name was.
The obituary is for a Julia Cooper, and the woman's name is Justine.
Justine Cooper. They're sisters.
Yeah, they're twins.
And yes, after she attacks him in an alleyway and he pins her against a wall, he lets go and rattles off everything he knows about her, that she's mourning her dead sister, who obviously died of a vampire attack. Holtz is clearly trying to recruit her as a warrior who will die for his cause, but she's playing hard to get. Can't blame her. Holtz has a pretty creepy vibe going on. Just, you know, not exactly the type of creepy she's got him pinned for. Right. More of a psycho cult leader type than the trench coat exhibitionist type.
And the problem is his coat.
Yeah.
If he had a different coat on, he would give a significantly, like, cleaner vibe, I think.
Yeah. Him, but the old-timey time coat suits him, I think.
It does.
But he needs to get with the times. But he's only been here a couple of days.
It's hard to not see someone wearing a duster and not appreciate it. That's what that coat is called, a duster.
Yeah, I know. I don't know, the flap on the back has always been weird to me. Whatever.
Well, it's designed for rain,
mm-hmm.
and it allows the rain to run off your shoulders easier.
Makes it wick off, yeah. Wick off. Wick you. Cut to the Hyperion.
Where Cordy and Fred were up all night, by the looks of it. They were completely unsuccessful in tracking the websites. Enter Angel with the baby. He's still... The whole scene, he's still just, anytime anybody like walks up, like, here, let me take the baby. He like does a football juke
no.
and turns away and keeps walking.
And
but anytime anybody says anything about maybe you should do this with the baby, he just doesn't even acknowledge that they spoke.
And Fred's got all kinds of anxiety because she thinks he's going to come snap at them about not having their track down the websites yet.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the source of the website.
But Cordy intercepts.
Oh, yeah.
Cordy intercepts, and she offers that maybe they should take shifts taking care of the baby. Because it turned out that Angel didn't sleep at all. And it was, but it wasn't because he couldn't sleep. It was because he was just so enamored with watching the baby.
Mm-hmm. But Cordy really turns on the charm right out of the gate here. Because she's like, don't worry, Fred, I got this. And she struts right up to Angel. And she's like, motherfucker, you've been up all night? Don't even sweat your tiny little tits off about it, because I got this. That's a direct quote, straight from the episode.
Yes, exactly.
Mm. She jumps into the thick of it with Angel pretty quick, all like, hey, give me the baby. And, you know, go get some sleep, motherfucker. And he's like, no, it's my job to be everything to this kid now, because I'm his only family. And Cordy's like, is that so? Why don't you come with me, dipshit? And she leads him out to the courtyard and into the sun, where he's like, whoa, what the fuck, Cordy?
And she points out, it's like, you know, we're going outside where he's going to want to play someday. Or maybe you're going to need to take him to the hospital during the day if he gets sick.
Yeah, he's like, I can't go in the sunlight. And she's like, oh, that's a good point. But he immediately is like, it could be the sunniest day of the year, and if that kid needs to get to the hospital, he's going to get there even if I don't.
And in kind of a badass moment, he actually sticks his hand into a sunbeam, and it just starts to smoke.
That's not badass. And he badass. Fucking holds it there. That's just stupid.
I mean, he's doing it for a stupid reason, but he is still a badass.
I don't know. What was his name? G... Liddy, I don't know. That motherfucker that died recently, who was a fucking war criminal. I think it was Henry Kissinger. Don't quote me. Correct me if I'm wrong.
He was a war criminal?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, that guy. Sorry, my brain was conflating a different name. No, don't mind me.
Yeah, and I might be confusing him with someone else, but I'm not too worried about it because I'm not going to upset anybody if I accidentally talk shit about Henry Kissinger. It was either him or someone else who would regularly hold their wrist over a candle and stare somebody in the eye as a means of intimidating them. And like, that's where the trope comes from.
Oh.
And he did it to the point where he like fucking injured himself, where his wrist was just regularly a gross black scab. And he acted like it was made him such a badass, but it just ended up being really fucking off-putting for everybody that ever interacted with him and saw him do it. So it didn't quite have the effect that he was going for. But I heard that all on Behind the Bastards. If anybody out there, I'm sure at least one of you listens to Behind the Bastards. Call in. Actually, please call in. Let me know if I'm remembering that right, because they talk about somebody different on Behind the Bastards every week.
Right.
Could be, easily be someone else. Anyway.
Okay. I'll take your stance on it.
Cool.
He's not a badass. He's just an idiot.
Yeah. I don't think it proves anything. If he's just hurting himself. Stop hurting yourself. Quit hitting yourself.
I'm with Wolfram and Hart.
Everybody should have a lawyer like this.
Mr. Winters shall never be convicted of any crime, ever. Should you continue to harass our client, you'll be forced to bring him into the light of day.
I want that stricken from the record.
A place I'm told is not all that healthy for you.
So they step back inside. Lorne has just woken up and steps up. He's apparently still hearing a humming, which we forgot to mention. He was hearing a humming last night when they got back to the hotel. He's still hearing a humming and talking to Angel, kind of slides something into his pocket, but it's very subtle, but mentions that the only safe place is in a closet.
Yeah, and I totally, like, this went right over my head until the end of the episode.
It did mine as well.
Uh-huh.
It did mine as well.
I'm like, oh, man, they're really just reaching for something to give Lorne a little bit of screen time here, and he's just gonna riff on about Angel. Oh, he smells like bacon because he burned himself. It must be hard finding a safe room in this hotel because it's all windows. Only safe place would be a janitor's closet. Wink, wink. Aggressively.
It is a great show of just how fucking smart and clever Lorne is. Honestly.
And smooth.
And smooth, yeah.
Absolutely. Because he figures out in a heartbeat that this place is bugged. Right. They've been bugged for weeks.
And that's the thing is he can hear it. He can hear the transmitters that we learn later.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, Gunn returns with more weapons. I was expecting him to have guns or something, but it's just, you know, more melee weapons.
It just looked like one big grapple hook to me.
He did definitely bring a flamethrower, though.
Well, yeah.
Because later, Wesley has a flamethrower.
That makes
sense. And, like, honestly, why didn't they have one beforehand? Like, that's just something you should keep on hand in their line
of firepower, literally. Yeah. There we go. All right. Bringing everything together. Cool. It's almost like they thought things through, kind
exactly.
of. Exactly. Yeah. I actually really enjoyed Lauren's line where he says, "Oh, yeah, I slept like a baby. Cried and wet myself all night."
You know, I like that because I have never understood that fucking line.
It's not a very good line.
No. "Oh, I slept like a baby." That means you didn't sleep, right? But everyone always uses it like they slept really well, and I don't get it. I've never understood that.
Like, sleeping like a log makes more sense, even though logs don't really sleep.
Or sleeping like the dead.
Yeah.
Like that. Like the deep, deep sleep like the dead. That's what... I've never understood that line. It always angers me. Thank you, Lorne.
Anyway, Gunn also noticed as he was coming in that three new sets of demons and people out front are casing the place.
Yep.
Or stalking the place or whatever. There's a darkened windowed car, probably full of cult vampires, a biker gang, and some cloaked dudes in a van.
Yeah, specifically, the cloaked dudes are Liliad demons. They eat babies. Nom, nom, nom.
Mm-hmm.
And they're probably interested just because they want to see what a vampire baby tastes like. But yeah, they have strong magic and they might actually be able to break the force field.
Got
to
get that vampire veal, baby.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Vampire human hybrid veal. Always with the animal noises. Gets you every time. So, yeah, these guys have powerful magic that's strongest at night on the full moon, which is tonight. Oh, no.
Son of a bitch.
Jeez. What luck. We cut back to files and records at the dog is sheep snort snort.
Where Lila is still digging through files.
Strewn all over the floor.
And finally, she manages to remember Holtz's name. Enough to where the lady at the desk is like, "Oh, you mean Holtz?" And then rattles off all this fucking information about Holtz.
Yeah. And turns out she knows everything about every file because it's her job. Oh, and also she's got some sort of magic brain power that makes her eyes flicker and roll like a card catalog.
Right. Well, and I like it because it turns out that she is file and records, not runs file and records.
Right.
And... you know, multiple times she said she is filing records.
But she doesn't say it like she's, "I'm filing records."
Exactly.
Files and records. It's my job. Yeah. Huh.
But yeah, turns out she just knows all the information in the fucking files. Lila's a little irritated.
You wouldn't have thought that this would have been the first time Lila ever needed to go to files and records. You'd think she would know this.
Yeah.
But whatever.
I could... almost kind of believe that maybe this is just the first time that she's had to go to the file and records on her own, because like maybe before this she could always send like a minion to do
normally
it or something. Got
mailroom boy or something that'll do it for her. Yeah,
maybe, but still,
you'd think she would have thought to ask the records clerk,
right?
Like, "Well, do you know enough? Could you like recommend where to start to find something about blah, blah, blah?"
Right.
And then her eyes would go and she'd rattle off everything.
And Lila would be like, "Oh, you're weird. Got it.
Love it." You're my kind of weirdo.
You know, Filin Records points out that Holtz, I like this, Holtz hunted Angel and Darla for 9 years. And in that 9 year span, killed 378 vampires. Which is fucking impressive.
That's good numbers.
That's Buffy numbers.
It is. Yeah. He's almost a good dude.
Almost. That is just a bit more than a vampire a week, or a bit less than a vampire a week.
Oh, so for that, a 9-year span.
Yep. For a 9-year span, that's at least a minimum of one vampire every, like, roughly 10 days.
That sounds doable.
That's solidly Buffy numbers. And this is in an area, like, he had to probably range a great wide area to be able to kill him.
I feel like Buffy does 3 times that much, though.
I think Buffy
does... It's still pretty good.
I think Buffy does 3 times that much because of the Hellmouth.
Sure.
Because vampires flock to the Hellmouth, so she's able to, like... Basically, it's like a goddamn salt lick.
Yeah.
So she's not running out hunting them down. They're coming to her. She's just standing in the doorway going, ree, 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 ree.
I mean, I almost feel like Xander could pull off one vampire every 10 days.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, for again, just being a dude?
Hellmouth.
Right.
They're just coming to him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But for just being a dude, hunting vampires in Europe, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, in non-modern times, without having anybody come to him and be like, you're a vampire slayer.
Right.
He just figures it out and takes it on himself. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
This is the moment where I'm like, ooh, maybe Holtz will actually be a good big bad. Like,
maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. We'll see.
I'm not holding my breath, mind you. I'm not holding my breath, but... This episode in particular, with him killing off the grappler demons and recruiting this chick and finding out how effective he was as a vampire hunter, I think maybe he might actually be a decent big bad.
I'm starting to like where they're going with it.
Yes.
It annoyed me at first, but I'm kind of starting to enjoy it. We'll see. Yeah. Possessed card catalog lady. It's fucking Wolfram and Hart's whole shtick at this point. Everyone seems to be possessed or have written away their soul in blood or something. So the lady catches...
Who the fuck sells their soul to be file and records, though?
It's probably really good pay. I don't know. So the lady catches Lila up to speed real quick. Angel murdered Holtz's family. Holtz tracked Angel and Darla relentlessly. He'd disappeared mysteriously in 1773, etc. blah. So Lila sums it up as, so we've got a relentless vengeance machine with the bloodlust to match. Good summation.
Yeah.
Glad you're catching on, Lila. Cool. Cut to the graveyard.
Where Justine is fighting a vampire. Hey, this is very much felt like Buffy, suddenly.
Completely felt like we're watching Buffy.
Also, I guarantee it's the exact same graveyard that they shoot Buffy in.
One of them. I'm sure they have a few.
Well, they have... There's no way in hell they don't have at least 3 or 4 graveyard sets.
They would have to.
And it's just one of those.
Since there's at least 12 in Sunnydale.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, Holtz finds Justine fighting a vampire. He helps her not die, and then lectures her so hard that she changes her mind about him being a creep, or at least about what kind of a creep he is.
Right, yes.
And he promises that he can hone her into an instrument of vengeance, and she's down for that.
Yeah.
She's like, you know what? Now that you stalked me down a second time, seems like a good idea.
I mean, she kind of sort of attempted to fight him, but... Couldn't really lay a hand on him.
She can tell that he's way above her skill level.
Exactly. And I like the bit, the last of this scene where she's like, yeah, that sounds fun, or that'll be fun. And Holtz responds with, no, it won't.
I assure you, it's not.
And you know what? No, I don't imagine training to be a vampire slayer would be fucking fun at all.
Especially
with Holtz. And when you're not like the mythical vampire slayer. No, fuck that.
He just seems like the most joyless cunt on the planet. He's made a job and a lifestyle out of being a joyless cunt.
He's the guy who teaches you how to dodge dodgeballs by throwing wrenches at your head.
At your nuts, yeah. Or your head, whichever. I don't know. That was joyful to watch, anyway.
To watch.
Holtz is just going to be like, you're having too much fun.
Right.
I'm gonna have to twist your nipples some more.
And he's also the type that would be like, oh, you need to learn how to fight when you're impaired, so stay awake for a week and then fight vampires and shit like that. I think he's completely accurate. She's not gonna have any fun. She's gonna very much regret her decision, I think.
You look well rested. You're getting lazy. Kind of shit. Anyway.
You know, if you got time to lean, you got time to slay vampires.
Exactly. So we cut back to the Hyperion where the demons, the vampires, and the bikers are all gearing up to storm the castle.
Yep.
And the A-team is shaking in their collective little booties.
And you know what? I think you kind of should be.
It's a
little bit scary.
Good cause, too, at the moment.
The Liliad demons start chanting to break the spell. The vamps and the bikers start fighting each other. Hey, that's helpful.
That's actually a little bit helpful, except, you know, they're fighting over to see who gets to kill them all first.
Right.
And Angel's like, fuck this, I'm taking my baby and I'm going somewhere else.
Yeah, the moment that everyone is like trying to come up with a plan to survive this fucking disaster, Angel's like, you know what, guys? It's been real swell. Fucking see ya.
You'll be fine. Once they realize it's not here, they'll leave you alone. It's going to be okay. So they all shame him for running out when the going gets tough. And I'm like, wow, this guy just can't fucking win, can he?
And Cordy even points out, it's like, what, you're expecting that stepping over our dead bodies will slow them down?
And Gunn's like, oh yeah, just run. That's what you're good at. And I'm like, Jesus, guys.
Although Gunn does point out, oh, what, are you going to fire us all again?
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, it's like, no, that's a very valid point. The way they characterized Angel in the previous season, no, this is fucking par for the course.
Right.
In the end, he's kind of a prick.
He can be. I mean, it turns out this is all premeditated because
right.
He needs, yeah. He's playing him. He's playing everybody right now.
And I have a feeling that the only two people who have any idea of what's actually going on with Angel is, in fact, Lorne and him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of the other A-team has any clue, because I don't think there was any opportunity to actually inform them of the actual plan.
Well, I think he was kind of playing them the last time when he fired them. I think he was kind of playing them then, too, because, you know, he fired them because he thought it was in their best interest for their safety. Like, he couldn't keep them safe.
Yeah.
So it's really not too much different from that.
I mean, except that, you know, he's leaving them there to die by the demons and vampires and shit.
Yeah, but they're fine.
I mean, they've got a flamethrower.
They've got a flamethrower. What could possibly
They really
go
are
on?
Fine. Like, it's kind of great.
Yeah, Wesley and Gunn are there. They're both badasses. And Cordy
they are,
and Fred
in fact.
Are also, you know, battle-tested, can handle themselves enough to survive.
Hey, and Cordy's learning how to fight.
Yeah.
So she's going to be pretty much on par, I think, with Wesley and Gunn.
Fred knows how to hide.
Yeah.
Really well.
And do math.
And do math in her hiding place.
And, you know, build a toaster decapitation machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A cockroach popcorn head machine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There's nothing so lovely as dreams. Everything's in them. Everything hidden. Open those chambers and you can truly understand someone and control them.
Cut to Wolfram and Hart. It's brief, but essentially they're just all talking about what they want. Linwood fears the baby. Grant wants the baby dead. Lila wants to vivisect him.
What?
Vivisect.
Vivisect.
Oh. Dissect, but you're alive.
Yeah, yeah. Linwood is just straight up impressed with Lila in this
right.
moment.
Really? He's no, like she turns around, knows how to please her boss.
He turns around and he's like, shit, girl. I did not know you could be that disgustingly vicious. I love it.
Well, and my favorite part with it is that at first she's like, no, what the fuck are... Fuck you, Gavin. We don't want the baby dead. And he immediately is like, what? You're so upset about us killing a baby.
Yeah, they hurt the little baby.
And she's like, no, fucker. We want to cut him open and see what makes him tick. And Linwood's like, that's my kind of woman.
1 point to Gryffindor. 0 points to Gavin. Fuck you,
Lila's
Gavin.
Slytherin, for fuck's sake.
Oh, right? Yeah. Start calling Gavin Gryffindor as as a slander.
I, I like it.
Or nice job, Hufflepuff.
We have a quick scene of just Angel running through the sewer, and then we get back to the hotel.
Yeah, where the Wolfram and Hart ops pull up in Hummers on the street. I thought they were going to like be down in the sewer.
Right.
And block off Angel's path and ambush him down there. But no, they waited for him to get up to the street and get into his car and then chase him.
Which, you know, lucky he decided to use the car.
Yeah.
Like, I'm kind of surprised he did decide to use the car. Well, like, okay, it makes sense now that we know he's actually leading them away.
His plan makes perfect sense. Like, you can make a hell of a lot more ground in the car, but it was a little too close, and obviously everybody saw him. It makes sense now that we know that he was leading them
right,
away.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're right.
But, like, if he really wanted to get away, he could have easily gone fucking miles and miles in the goddamn sewer.
Just in the sewers, yeah. Huh. So, really, I'm questioning Wolfram and Hart more at this point. Like,
oh, yeah.
They knew he was going to be in the sewer.
Exactly.
Why didn't they ambush him in the sewer?
Also, if you know that the fucking base of operations of one of your biggest enemies has sewer access, why would you not set up surveillance system of every fucking sewer tunnel that goes through there?
Yeah.
Just a thought.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking evil lawyers are dumb.
Very dumb. Dumb, 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 dumb. Dumb. So, yeah, they show up in Hummers. The Lilia demons bring the barrier down. Wesley and Gunn are making very dated movie references about who they're pretending to be to steal themselves to get ready for the battle. Cordy shames them for being nerds, rightfully so. Angel comes out of a manhole. Oh, we already talked about that. Angel comes out of a manhole. It's not half as homoerotic as you might think it sounds. He's coming out of a manhole. Sounds pretty homoerotic.
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
But it's not.
No.
Fucking rip off.
It bothered me, actually. It's such a small, stupid thing. But once I noticed it, I couldn't not notice it. And I had to watch it again just to make sure that I was noticing it properly. But the manhole cover moves. And then as Angel climbs out, he is climbing out of a square hole in the ground. It was a round manhole cover.
Yeah.
And like the moment I saw it, I couldn't unsee it, and it angered me.
You should be angry.
And I just wanted to understand why they had a square hole in the road. Now
you should
and
write
I'll
an
never,
angry
I'll
letter.
I'll never learn. I'll
I
never get
I
to
support
know the answer
this.
To this.
I think we can find out. We're not gonna, but we
we're
could.
We're not gonna.
We could. It's just not really worth it. Maybe I'll tell you what. When we interview David Boreanaz, we'll ask him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll happen.
I'll totally be able to remember that.
Totally. So the Hummers go after Angel as he drives off. The Lilia demons fight off some other faction, and Wesley gets a fantastic one-liner as one of the demons demands the child's location. They bust in, and Wesley's like, and it's like, where's the child? And Wesley's like, oh, it's upstairs in room 312. Why don't you go up and get him? Oh, wait, I have a better idea. Flamethrower! Yeah.
I like Wesley with a flamethrower.
That was great.
I appreciate that they gave him the flamethrower.
It was worth it, definitely.
Also, it bothers me a little bit that the flamethrower does not set the hotel on fire. Because I don't know if you know this. Because
it's made of paper and...
Well, and no, like, do you know how far a flamethrower shoots fire? Like upwards of 30 yards.
I was going to say, now that you mention it, whenever I've seen it, they're definitely outside and it's quite a ways. Yeah.
Like, obviously it's not a real flamethrower. They didn't really use it on the set, but just a real flamethrower, he would have had to be standing at the back of the lobby to be able to hit the doors.
Yeah.
And not, you know, completely douse the entire fucking thing in fire and fuel.
Yeah. Maybe it's all just marble, so there was nothing to really
ignite. Maybe.
Right
maybe.
Away.
It's a it
seems unlikely.
It's one of those movie magic things that irk me a little bit.
Let's just assume that the demons consumed all of the flame. They were the only combustible material in a good 10-foot radius. So it's fine. Everything's fine.
Although I think it would have been funny if they did, in fact, set the hotel on fire and then they had some sort of moment. Like, before the flamethrowers used, Wes is like, why didn't we get one of these sooner? And then he accidentally sets the hotel on fire, and then later Cordy's like, that's why we didn't get one sooner.
Yeah.
That would have been good.
Or Lauren's running around with a little spritz bottle. This is why. This is why, Wesley.
That would have been great.
So yeah, there's more fighting outside. Then some asshat vampire runs inside to warn his master that they've already taken the child and it's a trap or a trick or something. He looks down to see a burned corpse where his master used to be, and then looks up to see Wesley, and the last thing he'll ever see, a flamethrower again. Wesley's just being a camper at this point.
The flamethrower really handles this whole situation quite well.
Quite.
They had nothing to be worried about, honestly.
I mean, sure. So yeah.
I doubt the fucking mercenaries would have been prepared for a goddamn flamethrower.
Probably not. As long as they all just keep running in that same door, and they're like, I don't know, I think it's clear now. Let's try it. Oh, nope. Death by flames. Hopefully the next round makes it. There sure is a lot of fire in this doorway.
Man, there's a big pile of bodies just building up there at the door.
We can get over it. I've climbed so many burnt dead bodies before. The fire's gone. It's stopped.
They can't possibly have any more fire.
Do you know how hard it is to start a fire? Jeez. And that's about the intelligence level we're dealing with.
Yes.
Here. So it's,
exactly.
It's fine. It's a perfect plan.
They've never been in trouble.
It's a perfect plan. And the rest of the goons are now, they've figured out that Angel's running away with the baby, and they're onto him, and they're chasing after Angel. Wesley hopes that they stalled long enough, and Gunn is just being a bitter asshole. He's like, whatever.
Which is what tells me that Gunn and Wesley were not in on the plan.
Right. Yeah, exactly. He's like, whatever, running away was his call. Not to mention, none of the rest of them have cars, I guess.
Right.
But whatever happened to Gunn's truck? We haven't seen that in ages.
Yeah.
I think he must have like let one of his buddies borrow it and then just never asked for it back.
Maybe.
Or they never gave it back.
But yeah, on the chase, Angel's talking to the baby through the whole chase. But he's talking about how what scares him the most isn't that, you know, the big convoy of people wanting to murder him. That doesn't scare him. What scares him is the baby asking things like, why is the sky blue and all this? You know, why is there always pig's blood in the fridge?
I don't necessarily have answers for all these questions. Well, okay, the last one.
I thought that was clever.
Pretty cut and dry.
But yeah, Angel leads the convoy to like a quarry or a mine or something like that.
Looked like an old abandoned mine. Angel leads them down there, and they chase him down, and then they're like, give us the baby. And he's like, what, this baby? Yeah, take it. Just hucks it at them.
Hold on. Before he hucks it at them, he said, when he gets surrounded, he looks down at the baby in his arms and says, could be worse. At least you're not crying. And I felt that. Yeah. I don't like babies crying. It grates on me like nails on the chalkboard.
But he did a real good job of making us think that he really had the baby.
Yeah. He really did.
And he needed them to believe that. That was key.
But no, he tosses the baby. Turns out it's not a baby. It's a teddy bear and a bomb.
Mm-hmm.
That poor teddy bear.
I'm sure the teddy bear's fine. It made it out perfectly unscathed, and it's just living its best life at the farm down the street, Rex.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it's
at the teddy bear farm.
Running wild and free.
Like they do.
Climbing trees.
In the cotton fields. Because that's what it's made of.
We cut to Wolfram and Hart. Linwood is reviewing the footage of Lorne slipping the note to Angel and mentions that some sort of note. I like how he has him zoom way in to look at the note, like as if he were going to try and read the folded piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
He really needed to see the note, like 5 by 3 feet on the big ass TV.
At least they didn't say enhance.
Right. He did have him zoom in like by 100 or some shit like that.
Way higher DPI than yeah. you would think that security cameras are capable of.
But no, it turns out that everything was all a big performance.
Because they realized that Angel was tipped off by Lauren about the cameras, who could hear the humming and knew that the janitor's closet was the only place they hadn't tapped.
Yep.
So he slipped him a note during that bacon conversation. I was wondering if that was all just filler fluff back in the moment, but they brought it together. Love it.
They really did.
So Angel had this planned all along from that moment forward, and it just he just needed to bluff out the A-team. And he wasn't just being a big dick.
Right.
For no good reason. No,
so they review a little bit of the information about Holtz. They conclude that he's some sort of time traveler. And then the vampire alarm goes off. And in enters Angel.
The vampire alarm? Yeah. Oh, yeah. The vampire alarm.
The vampire alarm.
At Wolfram and Hart. Yeah, that's what that was.
Angel comes in and gives a cut on Linwood's face. My son has a tiny scratch on his cheek. And now, by coincidence, so do you. I'm holding you personally responsible for anything that happens to him, whether it's your fault or not. A cold, a sunburn, a scratched knee, whatever happens to him happens to you and then some. And just really lays down the law that, like, hey, guess what? You don't like the idea, but you're going to be paying a lot of money to protect this child.
Mm-hmm. And not only are you going to not come after him, you're going to make sure he lives a long, happy life. You just became his godfather.
Yep. And then as he leaves, I love the line, start saving for a college fund. I have my heart set on Notre Dame because he's fucking Irish.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I didn't put two and two together. Yeah. There it is. Yeah. Lila uses Gavin's handkerchief to dab at Linwood's cheek, but he ain't having it because poor Will Man Baby's too embarrassed.
Yeah.
Whatever. Fuck Linwood. Right in his new cheek hole.
Right in his new cheek hole.
Wow. Ew. Cut to the hospital.
Yes, where Angel isn't and the baby's there. Because the baby actually was with the A-team instead.
Yeah, Cordy was carrying him for a change. And they got the baby looked at and they named Angel. They had to give him a first name. They had to pick something. They went with Geraldo.
Yes.
But we did hear Angel's actual real name earlier this episode.
Liam.
Liam.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And specifically, Lila called Liam a wimpy name, which I thought was funny. It's not, though, but that was funny.
Nobody ever called Liam Neeson a wimp.
Exactly. But no, Angel names the boy Connor. It's a big happy ending.
Angel's first name is now Geraldo because they had to give him something. Gunn bought a stroller. Fred declares Angel a pet psychologist who fights crime just to give him a little more of a human backstory.
Wasn't important for the birth certificate or anything, but
just having fun.
Just some fun.
Yeah, Cordy gets a much-deserved thank you out of Angel. She's always pushing for it and finally gets it by the end of the episode. Angel names the baby Connor, not Wesley. So shut up, Wesley. Nobody likes you anyway. And they all strut down the hallway with Angel pushing the stroller in front.
But this makes his Connor's name actually officially Connor Angel.
It does. Yeah, Angel's a last name now.
And it actually threw me because when I... Because oftentimes when I go to watch an episode, I pull up the wiki just in case. So I have that up. Mm-hmm. And I had noticed that the wiki on Connor has his name as Connor Angel. And I'm like, that's weird.
Right.
Like, is there other Connors or something? But no, it's because that's his actual name. It's
canonically his full name. Yeah. Gerarg.
Gerarg.
Is this for me? I must be ready. I need my strength.
Give me more!
Nights, I shall walk in the earth.
Hold on. You've got something in your eye.
How'd you feel about this episode, Josh?
I felt like it went logically where it needed to, but still left something to be desired.
Yeah, I think it definitely did that. I think it did better than the past few episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting real annoyed by Angel by the end of it. Real fucking annoyed. But other than that, I didn't hate it.
Yeah, I feel like the stakes just didn't feel high enough when the hotel was surrounded. Right. At no point was I worried.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think this episode suffered from being an episode where they didn't want to put a lot of money into it. Mm. So they didn't hire a bunch of extras to storm the building. It was really just a dozen guys. And that's it. And it's like, a dozen fucking bad guys? That's nothing to this team.
Well, I felt like they got out of it too easy. I feel like this could have been several episodes long of harrowing, suspenseful, action-packed, fucking die-hardian shit with these guys storming the hotel and the A-team having to fight them off, them getting separated in different parts of the building, and each one of them has their own story of how they fight off a handful of these demons.
You remember the episode when Wesley had gotten shot by one of Gunn's former gang members?
Yeah.
And they were in that like youth center that was like getting attacked by was it zombies, I think?
Something like that.
But
I think he got shot by a cop, actually.
Was it a cop?
It was a demon cop.
Right. You're correct. It was a cop. He was shot by a cop, but he was on his deathbed, essentially, during this siege where this youth center was like getting attacked by fucking zombies. And he
specifically jumped in front of the bullet to save one of...
Yes. But my point is the siege on that youth center was way better than what they got in this episode.
Mm.
And they really just didn't give us what you would expect with this circumstance. Show us how much of a fortress the fucking hotel is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, show us what kind of steps they have put in place to make this a safe place.
Right. Yeah, because, I mean, we made quite a lot of fun of it earlier in a we accept it kind of a way, but actually, they got off way too easy just being able to burn a couple of idiots at the front door.
Exactly. Like, there's the fucking courtyard entrance. There's got to be all sorts of fucking back entrances to the goddamn building.
Yeah.
Even if the doors are locked, there's still fucking vampires and demons and shit that could bust down doors. Or even, climb the walls outside and go in through fucking windows.
These guys are going to think outside of the box. Exactly. They're going to come in through the sewers. They're going to come in from up top. Yeah, they're going to climb walls.
Like, they could have really gone over the top, gotten enough extras to where it felt like a dangerous siege, and really like hammered home the scale of what was going on here. And they didn't do that at all.
No.
Especially with how much fucking buildup they had with this long list of fucking enemies and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, oh, and there's basically hits out on this baby on the web. Like, on top of that, and it's a dozen fucking guys that they can just kill off with one flamethrower.
Yeah. So, all in all, I feel like they wasted too much time on awkward moments that didn't pay off, where they're trying to establish this bond between Angel and the baby and fill that out. And then there's Holtz building his army. They could have done that in much less time than what they did.
Honestly, I think it would have really worked if they completely cut out the part of Holtz finding Justine.
Yeah, just him saying, I need warriors. That's it.
Yeah, just that. Leave it at that. He's out the rest of the episode. Doesn't need to be there. And then, honestly, they should have written it as like a third act film, like fucking Die Hard, where the entire third act of the episode is just the siege on the hotel.
Yeah, they should have concentrated much more on the siege on the hotel. That
should have been an entire 2/3 of the episode.
Without Angel running.
Yeah.
That was a waste. That was a cop-out is what it was. We wasted a good siege on Angel running because he had forward information.
Hell.
It was boring.
No, what they should have totally done is had the siege, and for half the siege, Angel is fighting fucking monsters while holding a goddamn baby and doing it and being a badass.
That would have been badass.
That would have been sweet. And then halfway through the siege, he's like, no, we need to go. I'm going to get out of here. And then leaves.
Or doesn't even announce it, just leaves. No, him fighting off demons while holding the baby, and the baby likes it.
Yes. So, like, laughing as if, like, you know, you're throwing the baby up in the air kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
that, exactly.
Because this isn't a normal baby.
I think
it doesn't get off. It doesn't calm down from lullabies. It calms down from death and destruction. Yes. That's where the story was.
Adrenaline. Yes, that's you're completely what should have fucking happened.
Mm-hmm.
Have the siege be the entire fucking episode.
Because it's so connected to Angel, and that's when Angel truly feels alive and in control and powerful.
Actually, you know what they should have even done? The moment the A-team gets back at the hotel and they see the place a goddamn mess,
mm-hmm.
they should have been like, holy fuck, there's people right behind us. There are people on their way here. We need to fucking fort this goddamn place up. And they should have immediately, not the siege happens in a couple of nights. Like, they get a full fucking night's rest and then the siege happens. Bullshit.
Yeah, right?
No, that should have been that fucking night. Just
up the stakes right there.
Exactly.
Everybody's exhausted. The place is already fucked
exactly.
up.
Exactly.
Love it. We should have been writers on this show. You guys missed out. Oh, well.
Right.
What's your quote of the day, Rex?
I have to go with sorry, my bastard.
Good choice.
That was the very first moment where I'm like, oh my God, I love that as a response. And I am going to use that in the future.
Nice. Yeah, I did like that. I got to give mine to Wesley upstairs, room 312. Why don't you go get him? Oh, wait, I have a better idea.
Flamethrower!
Obviously, he doesn't yell. It would have been great if he did yell flamethrower as he used the flamethrower.
Yes, that, I agree.
That would have been so Cyril from Archer.
Right.
Suppressing fire! Anyway. Well, there it is. That is another episode of Ale with Angel, everybody. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook. Don't forget to log on to X once every 6 months to a year, just to note the toppling, disastrous mess that it's become.
Yes.
And if you're interested, you can also check out the cobwebs on our account while you're there. If you feel like it, you can check out our website at www.beerwithbuffy. We still have a merchandise store that is maybe going to change soon.
Yeah, there might be some changes coming to our website.
If you'd like to support us, drop on by our Patreon at patreon.com/beerwithbuffy. We have a cat naming perk. We can change up some perks too while we're at it.
Yeah,
get something fresh in there.
You have ideas for perks, be sure to let us know.
You know where you can do that is at our phone number, 269-743-0783. Or you can email us at beerwithbuffy@gmail.com. Don't forget to review us on iTunes. That is actually the number one way that you can help us. And once we get to 75 reviews, we're doing another hoodie giveaway. Last but not least, thanks as always to JJ Treadway for all of our opening, closing, and transitional music. This has been Ale with Angel. I'm Josh.
I'm Rex. Have a good night.
Keanu Speed, Rex.
Reeves be with you.
Whoa. Responsibility, and instead of which you enslave yourself to this cult.
You don't like the color?
You have a sacred birthright. You were chosen to destroy vampires, not to wave pom-poms at people.
Why can't you people just leave me alone?
It was a bit British, wasn't it?
wait, what have we done? Why are we watching this?